This is Zorba Pastor on your health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba through the rest of the hour talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice, some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Question for Zorba, call 800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Tell us about that research we'll be talking about.
Right. We're going to talk about those wonderful shoes the kids have that have wheels in the heels called Heelys.
I don't even know about those things.
Well,
I don't hang around
you
the
You are not hanging around with children, and you're not shopping in department stores enough, Tom. That's your problem.
Okay, what else?
And vitamin D. Really, vitamin D. Three issues with vitamin D and cancer. Exciting research on a supplement that may help you prevent cancer.
And a little bit controversial as far as the benefits and the possible negativity.
As always is with supplements.
Yeah, and our recipe?
Salmon teriyaki. Oh, it's one of my favorites.
Yeah,
I will
recommend this one. It is delicious.
It's delightful.
Don't forget, we have our medical myth buster coming up, too. You'll want to be around for that. Again, that number is 800-462-7413. Zorba, we welcome a listener now in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
Okay, a very interesting medical question.
Mm-hmm.
I just graduated from the master's program at the University of Wisconsin in business, and so I've had the great fortune to be able to travel extensively over the last 2 years.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I've been very lucky.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where the odd part comes. Are you familiar with what a cankle is?
A cankle?
Yeah.
No.
Not at all.
You know, when the very large women kind of lose their ankle, kind of like their calf just goes straight into their foot?
Yes. That is called a cankle?
Yes.
Oh. You know, I think if I use that in my office and I would say, Mrs. Jones, you have cankles. I have a feeling that if Mrs. Jones knew she had cankles, it would be considered to be not the right thing to say to her in the office.
No.
But yes, please go on.
Okay, so this is kind of where the story connects. When I traveled to like Africa or China or South America over the last year, I arrive at my destination, and about a week after I get there, one of my ankles swells very large. I get this cankle. And it's usually my left, but sometimes it's been my right. And then I ice it, elevate it, take some aspirin, and doesn't go away. And then about 2 days after I get home, it goes away.
Got it. So it's not as if you're on the airplane, sitting on the airplane, you get off the airplane and your ankles are swollen because you're off the airplane. Because if it's,
right.
That's going to happen within, while you're on the plane, immediately when you get off, certainly within 24 hours, or something of that nature. So that's not what's happening.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Changing in food habits when you travel, are you eating a lot of salt? And the reason I mention that is salt is associated with edema and swelling. If you eat a lot of salt, your ankles are much more likely to swell. Is that what's happening, do you think? You're salting your food more when you're traveling?
I don't know. Maybe the food in those various cultures is much more salty than I'm used to.
Mm-hmm. I would look at that because that would be one thing that I would look at. And then, of course, the issue is if it's a week later, sometimes it's an exercise-related issue.
What I was thinking. If you walk around a lot.
Good point.
I'm walking a lot in flip-flops, probably more. In general, they've been warmer climates.
Uh-huh. So you're wearing flip-flops. You know what I would go to? One of the issues with flip-flops is you're always, often when you're doing that, you're actually curling your feet in order to capture the shoe as it comes down. And I would go to a Teva. A Teva-type shoe, and that's one name brand. But Tevas stay on the feet. You don't have to, you strap them in. They're very comfortable. I would look towards a Teva-type shoe. And basically, it may be from that. Tom brings up a really good point. You may be walking in a different way because it's a hot climate, and this might be a shoe-related issue. Tevas for you.
Okay, great. Yeah, I leave for Europe tomorrow, so I was hoping that you'd have some
Have a great trip.
Have a great trip and go shopping for Tevas today.
And no cankles, we hope.
No cankles.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Sure. Bye-bye. 800-462-7413. On a related topic, Zorba, let's grab a quick question out of the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. This one comes to us from Crystal in Bryan, Texas. Crystal asks, every time I work out on the elliptical machine at the gym, my toes tingle like they have fallen asleep. Are my shoes too tight, or is the motion or the machine causing this?
Well, first of all, it could be either. Could be A or B. I like it. You know, it's like on a multiple choice test. Yeah. Is it A? Is it B? Is it A or B or neither A nor B? And the answer is all of the above, number five. But commonly, these things occur when your shoes are too tight. You're doing action. Just like it's pressure on the nerve. Just like you have carpal tunnel syndrome, which is because you put too much pressure at the base of the wrist and it causes a little bit of inflammation there. And the nerve that goes through there can become tight and tingle. You can have tarsal tunnel syndrome.
Tarsal.
And tarsal, there is a tarsal tunnel with a nerve in the foot. Doesn't occur as commonly as carpal tunnel because there are tarsal bones in the foot. That's what these little bones or their bigger bones in the foot are called. And often this is caused by pressure and by swelling once again around this tunnel. And that usually is from walking with a shoe that's too tight. So the answer is first I'd go to the shoes and then if not, I'd go to the action. So just like with carpal tunnel, it can be from pressure where your hand is, we'll say, down on the desk when you're working on the computer, or it can be from overuse syndrome in a factory. In the same way, it may be the action that you're doing in the gym, or it may be the shoe. I'd look at the shoe first. And one of the first things you do with the shoe is you you open up the last. The last are the things in the shoe when you tie your shoe, if this is a shoe she can tie. And you just loosen the whole thing up so you're a little bit floppier. And if that goes away, there's your answer.
Crystal, thanks for the email. You keep your lifestyle questions coming. Just send them in an email to
Zorba at WPR.org.
Again, our phone number is 800-462-7413. Zorba, our next listener is with us in Eugene, Oregon. Hi.
Hi, guys.
How can we help you?
I'm looking at having my knees worked on. I'm going to have total knee replacement coming pretty soon. I've been putting it off for a while because I ride my bicycle a lot, and I'm able to do that without having too much irritation. It seems to help the rest of my day because I get a good range of motion, and I ride maybe 200 or 300 miles a week, so that helps a lot. So my question is whether having one done or both done, I'm looking at, you know, if I do both of them at the same time, I know that the recuperation period isn't going to be much different. If I do one and one, I've heard from different sources that it's a fairly painful recovery at the beginning, and some people don't really want to have the other one done. So I'd like just Dr. Zorba's opinion on that whole picture and what he'd recommend.
Okay,
you're going to get it.
Absolutely. Great points that you bring up. Absolutely great points about, you know, do I do one or do I do two knees? Where's the benefit? You know, why not get them both done at the same time? What's the con? You know, the pro is I get it done. I have a lot of pain. I'm finished with it. I don't have the hassle. I only have to take off my time once. I mean, you can easily see the pro point. The con part is, what is the complication rate? That's the only con, right? I mean, you know, what's the complication rate? Well, the complication rate is higher in a double joint replacement because they're two joints, right? So the real issue is you're doing two joints at one time versus two joints separately, okay? In other words, add it up all together, put them in equation, which one has the greater complication rate? And the answer is we don't know. In some hands, in some studies, it has been shown that when you have a complication rate with two, it's more because you can't depend upon that one to walk on, right? You know, your right knee, is all of a sudden infected, but you can't depend on the left knee because that's recovering. So the complications, if they occur, are really more dramatic because you're more disabled. Now, are you a person who tolerates pain on the whole? I mean, you ride 200 to 300 miles, you know, a week. That's a lot of mileage. Do you have a high pain threshold or low pain threshold?
Pain is my friend.
Pain is your friend.
Very high threshold because I'm bike racing and all that stuff, and I don't think that's a problem for me.
I do both knees. That's what I would do. I would do both knees. That's what I would do. I would go for it. I myself would be aggressive, and I would say, get it done. I want to do both knees. I don't care. I'll deal with the complication rate. And, of course, I'm going to pick, A, a good surgeon, B, a good hospital, C, follow all their advice. I mean, obviously I'm going to do that, but that's what I would do. Now, somebody said, you know, I'm really bothered by pain, and, you know, which a lot of people are, and I don't tolerate pain very well. I would say, no way. No way. One knee, and then if you decide you want the other knee, you do the
other. But how incapacitated are you with both knees
at
the same time?
Well, you're more incapacitated, but it can be handled. And it's somebody who is a trainer, who can get through the pain, who can say, I can deal with this pain, I exercise, and I know what pain is like, and I can tolerate it and do the work, that's okay. You have to be able to tolerate it and do the work. For some people, the pain comes and it incapacitates them. They can't tolerate it. And that's just the way we're made. Mm-hmm. You know, some people are made to do that. I, for instance, when I have pain, I forget it 2 or 3 days
later. But
it's
strictly a pain incapacitation, not an immobilization.
Sorry. And if you have a complication, it's going to be a much longer recovery. The recovery, because the other knee may not have the complication, you can't depend on.
Right.
So the recovery is there. But I would prepare for it. I would do everything right. I'd get myself together, and I'd do them both.
Well, I feel good about that. Thank you, doctor. And my surgeon is a bike rider buddy, and the anesthesiologist is a bike rider buddy, and my recovery nurse is a bike riding buddy. So I can line those guys up and say, look, this has got to turn out good, or you guys are in trouble.
Well, you're home, baby.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for
appreciate
your call.
The call.
Bye-bye.
800-462-7413. That caller, Zorba, probably wouldn't want to wear these new wheeled shoes you were talking
about. Maybe. I've seen these wheeled shoes, and I love them. I myself would like to wear them. I saw them in Chicago the other day. I'm walking down Michigan Avenue, and I've seen them before, and these are little wheels that are in the heels. In fact, they're called Heelys, and they're a little wheel, and when you do your weight just exactly right, all of a sudden, the wheel pops down.
Pops out, and you can
slide. It's great. It's absolutely great. And it looks like an absolutely fun thing to do. But as you can imagine, a child with a wheel is a child who may have an accident. I mean, you know, walking down the street. And
that's the issue here. These things are so readily accessible, apparently, and people, parents, kids especially, don't think of the safety issues involved.
Well, kids never think of the safety issues on the whole. But parents do. You know, so here it is. They're in the department store, and they say, this is cute. I'll put it on. And they don't necessarily think of the fact that it's a wheel, which means the kids can do it in inappropriate places, like down a rough street. And, you know, here it is. If you strap on skates, inline skates or other skates, you know what you're doing. And all of a sudden, it's a skate. I'm getting ready to skate. I'm going outside, and I'm going to play. Mm-hmm. And frankly, what's happening is we're seeing really an explosion of injuries that are occurring on Heelys. And the question is, what should we do? So the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons has come out and said, well, you've got to wear helmets, wrist protectors, knee and elbow pads if you're wearing these shoes.
That's not going to happen.
No, that's not
going to
happen.
Kids are wearing regular shoes, and they're using them like regular shoes all day long. They aren't going to be wearing helmets.
Well, that's the point. As a parent, you have to say, if they're going to wear these shoes, you have to treat them as you would inline skates. Now, I have kids, but they're not young now. But when they wore skates, I said, well, do you have your elbow pads and your knee pads and wrist pads? And I try to get them to wear some safety gear, but they're going out and skating. These are shoes.
Yeah.
And so what happens is the parents have become more lax. I understand that. It's a little wheel. You're not going to do much. You know, periodically, you're just going to slide for like a few feet on the wheel. No harm, no bother.
The problem is, while you're doing that sliding, it is like the inline skate.
100%. 100%. So I think basically, if you're going to get a Heely and you're going to wear them, and frankly, I want a Heely. I want to have one of these things. I want a Heely. I looked at these things. I asked one parent, where'd you get it? And it was in the kids' department of Marshall Fields, you know, which was, well, I'm not going to go in the kids' department. But anyway, I didn't go and buy a Heely, but if you buy a Heely, maybe you ought to think about the safety issues of them. I mean, this company is going boom. Buy their stock. I mean, this is not inside trading. Buy their stock. You'll make a gazillion dollars because they invented a fun thing.
So,
some of them have lights on them, by the way. So when you're in the wheel, there are lights on
but
the shoes.
But so what is a parent to do? I mean, you don't want to deprive.
Safety. That's the issue. If you're going to buy the shoes, you got to treat them like a skate. That's what you do. Treat them like a skate. What does that mean? It means a wrist and elbow, all the protectors that you're going to want your kid. And if not, don't buy the shoe. That's what it is. That's what it is. It's a skate.
I'm sorry, but this isn't going to – the kids are not going to wear those things.
It's a skate. Well, it's like bike helmets. When we first introduced bike helmets, people said, oh, they're a pain in the butt. I'm not going to get a bike helmet for my child. Right, I'm not going to wear it, and now we have bike helmets. It's the same thing with seat belts. It's the same thing with smoking in a restaurant. Well, you have to allow people who want to smoke. Safety issues are society issues. If you're going to buy a Heely for your child, it's a skate. Do what you will, but you don't think of it as anything less than a skate. If you're a good parent, then you're going to tell your kids they can have it, but they have to be safe.
Good luck with it. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. We go to El Paso, Texas now. Hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Fine. What's up?
Well, I have a question about bug bites. I have a 2.5-year-old daughter, and we take her to a home daycare in the upper valley of our city, which is a little bit more wooded, a little bit more country, if you can. And last year she came home with a gazillion bug bites. There was one time she had 18 on her body at one time, and I wanted to know if there's any way, other than spraying her with off and using all of the lotions and all of that, if there's any way I can prevent this. My sister gave me some wonderful advice saying have her eat 2 match heads a day because it produces a natural whatever that fights off bugs. And I was like, I don't think that sounds right.
I have to tell you, I hear a lot of things. Okay. I get a lot of things on email, but I've never heard of eating match heads. You know, I mean, years ago when I went to college, I heard they put saltpeter, which is in match heads, in the boys' dormitory to keep them from thinking sex.
You remember that? We heard that in the Navy. Supposedly the Navy was spiking the food with saltpeter.
That you won't think about sex. So that's what I've heard about it. But now the saltpeter that's in the match head, I don't even know what saltpeter is. You know,
is there any such thing as saltpeter?
I don't know. Someone out there, tell us. Is there any such thing as saltpeter?
This is a huge email generator. Somebody's going to tell us about match heads.
Saltpeter and sex and match heads and eating match heads. Yeah, I don't think I'd give my kid a couple match heads. No siree, Bob. You know, the bug bites are an issue. Many years ago, an old-fashioned remedy was thiamine, 100 milligrams of thiamine, which is a vitamin. In a tablet, twice a day or 3 times a day. It's not going to hurt you. It's safer than match heads. And I think I would try that. But
even for a 2.5-year-old, that much thiamine?
Well, no. In a 2.5-year-old, I probably would give a small dose. I'd probably give 25 milligrams a day. Okay. I think they could handle that. They might swallow a pill or not. If not, kind of crush it down and put it in some applesauce and see if it makes a difference. The issue, though, with kids are they have sensitive skin. So they're much more likely to have a bigger bite. You know, a little kid with a mosquito bite swells up in a huge way because their skin is so sensitive and so thin.
Exactly.
The thing about DEET and the other things like DEET is they really do work. One of the issues with it, spray the clothing. The clothing can be very, very effective. And do it like a half an hour before so the stink, that smell, tends to go away. Mm-hmm. The smell really tends to dissipate and the spray tends to work after that. So take the clothing she's going to wear and spray it really good. And do that.
Okay.
And you can buy some clothing at sporting goods stores, which actually is impregnated. It's expensive, but it's impregnated with insect repellent type materials. Mm-hmm. But I think I would take the DEET and spray the clothing and see what that does. That may be enough to do it. And remember, when you're around a child with that, if you wear things that are not bright colored, it will tend to, you know, some mosquitoes and other bugs are attracted by color, but they're also attracted by heat and they're attracted by sweat. But spraying the clothing, I think, is besides the thiamine, those are the two things I would try.
Okay, thank you so much.
Sure, thank you. We appreciate the call. We have our recipe coming up, and this one is one of your favorites, salmon teriyaki. Now, before we started the program, Adam mentioned that since this is one of your favorites, you had promised Adam that you would actually cook it and bring it in.
That's right.
You have it in the back room.
I have failed. That's it. I have failed. I was
You gave Adam the day off.
Night. I gave Adam the day
and
off.
And said you'd bring the recipe in.
That's right, and I failed. Mea culpa. I failed.
All right. Anyway, we'll be doing the recipe. In spite of that, we won't have it to taste. But
you're going to have to imagine, Tim. You're going to have to imagine.
We have some more interesting research coming up, Medical Mythbuster, and maybe most important of all, your calls at 800-462-7413 here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Salmon teriyaki, one of Zorba's favorite recipes, coming up, and then more of your calls at 800-462-7413. Let's put it together,
Zorba. I love it. I love this recipe. I don't just make it a salmon teriyaki. I use it for boneless, skinless chicken breast.
Yep.
But this is a dynamite recipe. And the way I got into it, I happen to like teriyaki sauce. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes buy pre-made teriyaki sauce, but many years ago, I wanted to find the best teriyaki sauce recipe. So called a friend of mine in Chicago, a wonderful person, used to be an editor of a magazine called Sphere, worked in the food industry, and she sent me a book of recipes, and then she sent me the number one recipe that chefs that particular year called the best teriyaki sauce.
Mm-hmm.
And this basically is that recipe. So they sort of had a teriyaki sauce cook-off for that.
Uh-huh.
Now, the nice thing about using this with salmon is a fatty fish. It has omega-3 fatty acids, which are good for us.
Mm-hmm.
This recipe works as well with frozen salmon as with fresh salmon.
Uh-huh.
Now, frozen fish usually does not compare to fresh fish at all.
Right.
Salmon is different, and this recipe is different because I've done it both ways, and frankly, frozen salmon is nearly, not quite, but nearly as good as fresh salmon with this because the oil takes up the teriyaki.
Uh-huh.
So it's a good way of cutting down your food bill because fresh salmon is much more expensive than frozen salmon,
mm-hmm.
and the real issue is knowing what your frozen salmon fillet is. And I use a fillet if I use a frozen salmon. I do not use a steak. The steak salmon, and I'm not sure exactly how they cut it and where it is from the salmon fish, but the fillet tastes better than the steak.
Okay.
When you bring it up.
Yeah.
Okay, so start out with four salmon fillets.
Four salmon fillets.
That's right. Fresh, frozen, whatever you have around
okay.
the house, which
okay.
is good, and that's it. Okay, now here's the teriyaki sauce. A cup of sugar.
A cup of sugar.
That's right, regular white sugar. 3/4 cup of soy sauce, low sodium.
3/4 cup of low-sodium soy sauce.
Right, and I tend to use low-sodium with this just because if you want to salt it afterwards, you can.
Mm-hmm.
Some people like the taste of regular soy sauce, and that's fine. Pick the soy sauce you like. That's really important. So, there are a couple of brands that I use, and I don't use others. I don't use La Choy, which is sort of the most common soy sauce in America because it's really salty and it doesn't taste very good. So
okay.
I go to an Asian grocery store, find the soy sauce you like, taste them, see which one you like, and use it.
Okay.
A half cup of veggie stock.
Half a cup of vegetable stock.
Right. Now, if you want to use chicken stock, that's okay, too. A lot of times I'll have chicken stock
okay.
around, and actually, chicken stock tastes really good with this also.
Okay.
A teaspoon of freshly grated ginger.
A little tea, freshly grated ginger.
Right. Absolutely important. I keep my ginger in the freezer. It's easier to grate. I take it out. It stays there forever, mm-hmm. and you grate it on there. And if you love ginger as I do, you grate and grate and grate and grate and grate. You can have the whole room smelling of ginger. And it's wonderful.
That's a nice smell.
It's a good smell. You're right. A pinch of red pepper or a dash of Tabasco.
A pinch of red pepper or a dash of Tabasco.
Right, so Tabasco sauce, or if you've got some little pepper
okay.
flakes, you can put that in. And 2 ounces of sherry.
2 ounces of sherry.
Right, now it's cooking sherry. This is not sweet sherry.
Right.
This is cooking sherry. Mm-hmm. I use cheap sherry because I've discovered it doesn't make any difference at all. Okay, so combine the sugar, soy sauce, vegetable stock, ginger, red pepper, and sherry in a bowl and mix.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to give you a tip here. It's hard to get all that sugar into solution. It's amazing. I never realized until I made this
mm-hmm.
how much sugar there is in soy sauce. So what I do is I put it in my blender. Whirl the blender.
Oh,
it takes much less work. Put the ginger in there. Keep the ginger out when I'm actually cooking. I'll tell you what I do with it. And whirl it around, and it cuts down on trying to get that sugar mm-hmm. into solution. Okay, then you put the salmon fillets in the marinade.
Okay.
And I use most of it. I keep a little bit of it out to the side, but I use most of it. I keep out maybe a couple of ounces off to the side. And refrigerate for at least an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can refrigerate it overnight if it's easier. I can put this in the morning, and then I come back in the evening. It's
mm-hmm.
got to take at least an hour, but you can leave it in for 24 hours
sure.
without any problem. Okay, now. Place the salmon fillets on the grill.
Right.
So you put them on the grill. If you're going to do it in a broiler, you can do that, but the grill is the way to go. Preheat the grill because you want the grill to be nice and warm under immediate heat. Baste with the teriyaki sauce.
Okay.
Cook it according to directions.
Right.
That's generally about 4 to 5 minutes. Turn it over 4 to 5 minutes again.
Mm-hmm.
You cook it. You get a cookbook and look at the size of the salmon fillet. But pay attention to it and do it by time. That's
yeah.
what I've discovered.
Isn't this caloric? Because isn't a cup of sugar a lot
of
sugar?
We'll go through. I'll show you the calorie. Oh, okay. So you cook it, you turn it over, but I've discovered when you do that. And then when you're all finished, before when you're going to transfer it to the platter, yeah, baste it again with that extra ounce or two ounces of sauce. A couple of tips here. First of all, when you're done, you can shut off the grill and just leave it there. And I've discovered that it's very, very good at room temperature in addition to warm. Room temperature works really, really well. Mm-hmm. But basting it again with that extra ounce makes a big difference. And sometimes grating a little ginger on top of it makes it really, really good. Is it caloric? 431 calories. That's not very well. You know, it's about a quarter of what you need for the day, fifth of what you need for the day.
Yeah. Well, this is a question.
But it's really good.
The question is coming from a guy who has double cheeseburgers, so I don't know why I'm so interested in calories all this.
Right, you have your double. But I mean, there's a bit of calorie from that. Salmon is a caloric food because it's a high fat. Yeah. It's really a high fat item. Yeah. But this is really good. Fish once or twice a day is really good for us. It prevents
heart disease. You can sure tell this is one of your favorite recipes.
I love it.
You certainly are making love during this recipe.
This is my summer recipe with grilled peppers and a little brown rice off it on the side. This, I have to tell you, this is I love this recipe. It's my summer recipe. It's moi. And I didn't bring it in, so I'm sorry. I just didn't have time and I was
well,
lazy.
Well, we're happy to send it to you anyway. You'll address your request to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin. Our zip code is 53706. Be sure to include a self-addressed stamped business-sized envelope. We'll send the recipe to you.
Or come to our website at zorbapastor.org, and you'll be there. And while you're at it, go to our little podcast sign-up right on our website and sign up for our weekly podcast. You'll love it.
Question for Zorba? Give us a call at 800-462-7413. And Zorba, listener with us now in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I was wondering, I went to the doctor a couple weeks ago, and he said I have to increase my calcium intake, more dairy products, low bone calcium. Mm-hmm. And I'm on the Actonil, but also at home I've been drinking more milk. And it helps if I add a shot of brandy to it.
Wait a second. And wait a minute. It adds if you add a shot of brandy to your milk?
Yeah. Well, you know, brandy and maybe a splash of creamed cocoa, it kind of tastes like a brandy Alexander.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It tastes better.
How come it tastes better?
Of course it tastes better.
Now, wait a second. This is your breakfast drink in the morning? You have a shot of brandy?
Well, I work nights. And so when I get home in the morning and I do that, and I know you're not supposed to take alcohol before you go to sleep, but it kind of takes the edge off. I sleep really well.
I bet you do. Actually, the issue with alcohol is some people it keeps them awake. But I mean, I have a glass of wine during the evening, many, many evenings, and the data clearly shows it doesn't matter what the alcohol is. Probably it's red wine might have a slightly incremental advantage, but I kind of find this interesting.
And dairy before going to bed does help one go to sleep.
Better. Do you warm this up? Is this warm milk that you put this in, or you cool it down?
No, cold milk.
So what do you put in? Tell me again, what alcohol spirits do you put in this?
Yeah,
you've obviously experimented. Yeah, we're making notes. We'll have it on our website.
Brandy and what else?
A shot of brandy just a little splash of creamed cocoa.
Hey, cocoa. And then in your glass of milk, and that's what you do for calcium.
And that's what I drink.
Well, let's talk about the calcium now that we have the drink.
Yeah.
And it's heart healthy. I have to agree with it. I am going to use that when I lecture. I love it. I love it as a concept. And I really think it's okay. So I definitely identify that it's all right. Okay, what do you need?
It doesn't hurt calcium.
What you need is 2,000 milligrams a day of calcium. Actonil is a drug that we give for osteoporosis. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned you use Actonil. Mm-hmm. That's a drug that you use. And you need roughly 2,000 milligrams a day. And so you get it from dairy products and you get it from calcium supplements. Data seems to show dairy products may be better than getting it from calcium supplements. I think the data shows that. Calcium fortified orange juice and grapefruit juice is a way to get it. Dairy products, if you tolerate it, most of us do, is a great way to do it, maybe because there are other things in dairy products. So drinking that glass of milk at night before you go to sleep, eating a container or two of yogurt cheese as a way to do it. I don't think there's any data that shows that once you go above it that you get any benefit. You want to have it. But that is really a
That's
unique
a great idea.
Way.
Great
I
idea.
Love it. I love it. You have taken the nightcap and made it heart healthy. Now, for those who can't sleep with that shot, but here it is. You get home in the morning. So this is your morning drink, but your morning drink is what puts you to sleep. What do you do for a living?
I'm a registered nurse.
An RN who does the night shift. So, well, thank you for sharing that advice with our listeners.
Thank you.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener now in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hello, this is Eric. How are you?
Fine, Eric. How can we help you?
Well, I had a question about oatmeal. I'm trying to eat a little bit more healthier, trying to, you know, lower my cholesterol a little bit. And when I come into work sometimes, you know, the oatmeal is like soup. And sometimes it's like concrete. And I was thinking about bringing some instant oatmeal from home, since it's easier to prepare.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if there's any differences.
Between the...
instant and the regular.
Yeah. Do you read the labels? I'm not sure oatmeal is as healthy as people think it is, but maybe Zorba will correct me.
Oatmeal is good stuff. Oatmeal lowers cholesterol. The FDA has allowed them to state that on oatmeal. There's no doubt about it. You know, it's a carbohydrate, and often it has sugar in it, so you have to look at it as the amount of sugar and carbohydrate.
Yeah.
No, but
sir. Put milk in there.
No, milk is good. Milk is part of the DASH diet, which is we know that dairy products, especially dairy products that are not high fat, 1%
or 2%. But you eat a great big bowl, pretty caloric, isn't it?
You're always going to the extreme.
I'm just asking.
He wants to know about oatmeal.
I'm just asking.
So is your bowl like a quart bowl of oatmeal? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it's a quart bowl of oatmeal, and of course I throw in some raisins and some brown sugar.
So you like it. Well, let's talk about it. Whether it's a water issue, whether it's like concrete or whether it's not like concrete is purely a water issue. But Tom brings up a good point. First of all, the amount, how it is manufactured determines whether or not it's instant oatmeal or slow oatmeal. Mm-hmm. And slow oatmeal took, if I remember correctly, because I don't make slow oatmeal anymore. It used to take like 15 or 20 minutes. It was a long time. And then they developed a process, and I don't remember quite what the processing was, but it's a process whereby the oats are then treated so that basically they take on the water very quickly. You know, they take it on they have... You know, regular oatmeal, they have 20-minute oatmeal, they have 10-minute oatmeal, they have 5-minute, they have instant oatmeal.
Brad, our technical guy, calls that slow-going stuff slotmeal.
Slotmeal. So we have slotmeal. Obviously, slow. But when you look at the instant slotmeal, when you look at the instant ones, often they're more sugary. In other words, you get plain oatmeal, it's not sugary. If you look at instant oatmeal that's like raisin oatmeal, maple oatmeal, you've got to read the label and look at the difference in calories. That's the only issue from my point of view, because you don't get to add your own sugar. If you add your own sugar, you know what's in there. If they add the sugar, you don't unless you read the label. And often, in order to sell it, they make it really sweet. So from my taste, it's twice as sweet as I want to make it. Because when I eat oatmeal, I put sugar on the surface of the oatmeal. That gives it a sweet taste when it touches my tongue. But the sugar, when they manufacture it, they put it through the entire oatmeal. And so that's why they use twice as much sugar. So what I would do is I would go to an instant one that's a low sugar. But getting back to the point, whether it's concrete or liquidy, it's the same amount of stuff. It's a function of how many grams of oatmeal you have.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Yeah, good luck with the oatmeal at work,
You know, the issue that you had is it healthy?
Yeah.
Is the fact that we know oatmeal and a high-fiber diet reduces colon cancer and heart disease.
Yeah.
We also know if you get a lot of sugar and you're overweight, it increases the risk factor of diabetes and heart disease. And that's where the mixture comes in. It's really the carbohydrate and caloric load of the day, so it's got to fit in.
I know what he's talking about sometimes it's this way and sometimes it's that way. Oatmeal's tough. We go to a local Greasy Spoon who, if they're in the right mood, will make oatmeal for us. And you have to see who the cook is before you decide to order it, because you know if so-and-so is cooking, forget it.
The oatmeal isn't very good.
The other one can really do the oatmeal.
Really? You find the difference in the shoulder and the cook.
800-462-7413. Zorba, let's see if we can help out Bob in Oak Creek, Wisconsin now. Bob has a question about green beans. And no, we don't care that they spark in the microwave. Bob says, not too long ago, you guys were talking and laughing about flatulence-free beans. Zorba said beans were an excellent source of protein. I was wondering if that included green beans, and if so, are they in the gas-free department as well?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's interesting because I think of green beans as something different from dried beans.
Yeah, right. I think all of us do.
Yeah, they're clearly a bean. But when you think of dry bean, look at the size in your brain of the bean, the center of the bean, not the green part, but the center part, which is sort of the seed part of bean. It's not very big compared to other beans. So, yes, there's some protein there, but it's not as much because you're eating the green on the outside, is kind of, well, it's all veggie, but it's, you know, the cellulose on the outside is what you're mostly getting, and the bean itself has been hybridized out of the green bean, so it's mostly green and less bean. So the answer, does it have some protein? Yes, but it doesn't have as much protein, for instance, as a great northern bean. Right, doesn't have as much as a northern bean or a kidney bean bean. But yeah.
Conversely, it also wouldn't have as much of a gas problem.
That's right. So that's why people don't say I had green beans, and that's why I have flatus. Of course, nobody uses the word flatus unless you're a doctor and use other words.
We all know the word they use.
I think I have flatus. Right. Well, gas is an acceptable word, but why are there so many unacceptable words surrounding that particular bodily functions?
Yeah.
And Americans don't like to talk about bodily functions. But getting back to the gas issue, the answer is yes. If you probably ate a ton of green beans, you'd get gas too, but you'd have to eat a ton of green beans to do it.
Interesting.
So, yes.
We promise that sending us your questions, comments, and tips is always a flatulence-free process. Just send those emails to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have really interesting research coming up. We have our medical myth buster and, of course, more of your calls here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our phone number is 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, results of some really dramatic research on vitamin D.
Absolutely. I think this is sort of watershed research. Now, as with all research, we need confirmatory studies. Yeah. But this research shows that vitamin D is a potent cancer stopper. And I think this data shows we have to assume that taking more vitamin D is good until the study shows it's not good.
Here's the study.
You bet. Here's the study. Now, the study really wasn't looking for cancer. The study was really designed to look for osteoporosis. And the study looked at women. These are women who were in Nebraska, about 1,100, 1,200 postmenopausal women, 55 and older, free of cancer for 10 years. They entered the study, and they were randomly assigned to take either 14 to 1,500 milligrams of calcium with about 1,000 units of vitamin D or not. Okay, they followed them for 4 years, and here's what they found. 50 women were diagnosed with non-skin cancers. If we look a year after the study began, where the data is really more important. If we look at the entire study, we find out that there was a 60% reduction in the women taking vitamin D. Remove the first year when the cancer might have been sitting there and it just wasn't detected, and there was a 77% reduction in all forms of cancer that included breast cancer, lung cancer, and colon cancer. That's dramatic.
It is dramatic.
I mean, that's a dramatic difference for vitamin D. Now, we know that people in northern climates, for instance, in Canada, who are above the 37th parallel, that they don't get enough vitamin D, especially in the wintertime because of the angle of the sun and going outside because it's chilly.
But we need to talk about vitamin D because there are multiple kinds of vitamin D.
Right. This is vitamin D3. So this is D3. And D3 you can get through supplements, but it has to say vitamin D3. That's what it'll say on there. It also has another name. It's also called cholecalciferol, C-H-O-L-E. calciferol, C-A-L-C-I-F-E-R-R-O-L. Come to our website. We'll show you exactly which vitamin D supplements to get.
The skin cancer specialists are concerned that people are going to hear about the positive effects of vitamin
right.
D
go out
and go out in the sun and get skin cancer.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, so that's an issue. You know, this is, you know, the sun is a good cop, bad cop. You know, the skin cancer if you're out there too long. But basically, you can get vitamin D through some food sources such as egg yolks, oily fish such as salmon, sardines, but milk and margarine is where many of us get it, and we also often get it through other areas, but we don't get enough.
Yeah.
So I now am going to begin to recommend to all of my patients that they get 1,000 milligrams of vitamin D and that they make sure it says vitamin D3 in there as part of it.
Yeah, and when we talk about natural from the sun or a pill, this study was done with pills.
Absolutely. So I think in this case, until it's proven otherwise, vitamin D is your key to a long and healthy, cancer-free life.
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. And a listener joins in now, Zorba, from Norwood, New Jersey. Hi.
Hi, Tom, and hi, Zorba. I've got one from the medical mystery file for you
sure,
guys.
Sure, sure. Tell us.
It's having to do with my wife. She never had hives before. And when she was a native of the West Coast, moved out east, was having seasonal allergy problems, so she went to her her allergist. And he recommended that she might want to get the allergy shots. So he proceeded to give her a test with the little pinpricks on her forearm. And immediately after that, she developed hives. So we just figured it was probably from the stuff that he put into her forearm. But then she started actually getting the shots, and it just kept getting worse and worse. And there's actually another strange thing to this. She was taking Allegra before the shots began.
Mm-hmm.
And after she began getting the shots, if she takes Allegra or Zyrtec, she'll develop, she becomes Lizard Woman, is what happens. But it's kind of a mystery. All we got from the allergist was just that she's a strange one.
Mm-hmm. So has she gone to a second allergist at all to get a second opinion?
Actually, when we were living in New York, she had a separate allergist who gave her these medicines she's using now that work.
Yeah, see, the real issue is whether or not she should continue with the shots. If it were me, I'd stop the shots. That's what I would do.
Is it going to harm her if she does?
No, I don't think it'll harm her at all. And the real issue is she's being injected with allergens and she has hives.
Yeah.
So I got to make the connection there together, and I have to say getting the shots. Now, allergists, not all allergists, but many allergists love to get shots. And they love to give shots because, A, they're trained to give shots, and, B, it's part of their practice, and, C, kind of that's where they make their money.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I don't want to say that they have a financial interest, and I don't want to say this doctor has a financial interest, but the allergists who give lots of shots make more money. But no matter what the reason is, I'd stop the shots. She's getting shots. She's getting hives. I'd stop the shots for certainly 3 to 6 months and see what. And then I would treat with Singular, good drug for allergies, nasal spray and eye drops. I would treat with those, and I would treat in a non way, and I would just stop the shots completely. I think the shots easily could be the issue. You won't know unless you stop. You're not going to cause her any harm by stopping the shots.
Okay,
that's my advice.
We were under the assumption that that the shots were the ultimate.
Yeah, I don't think the shots are the ultimate at all. As a family doc, and I've been in family medicine for many, many years, I rarely recommend shots to people. I have very good allergists, and most of the time they treat them with medicine and they don't treat them with shots. They reserve shots for very specific instances. They do a really good job of seeing who needs shots and who doesn't. So on the whole, I am not a pro-shot person for allergies.
All right.
But I'm a pro-treatment for allergies. I think we have great treatments, so.
Right.
Thanks a lot for the call.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And allergists, address your comments for Zorba. Zorba
at WPR.org.
800-462-7413 is our phone number. Zorba, let's get to our medical myth buster. Today's myth will hit home with all of our germophobic listeners because it deals with ranking the dirtiest public areas. Many would think that public restrooms are atop that list. Zorba, is that true.
No, it's not. Public restrooms are not the dirtiest place that we actually go in, the ones with the most bacteria. And it's interesting because...
It would depend on the public restroom,
yeah,
obviously.
You kind of assume it's a restroom. It's yucky. It's got all this bacteria. But the International Journal of Environmental Health Research...
Well, what's dirtier? Yeah.
...looked at things. These are scientists. They spent 4 years collecting over 1,000 samples of bacteria. We're talking bacteria. So we're talking about dirtiest. We're not talking about junk and dirt.
When I was in high school, yes. And they gave us this little, what do you call it, culture dish when we were in the science class, and then they had us take it into the restroom and zoom.
Zoom, that's right. But that was high school. That was a long time ago. But they did stuff like that.
Yeah.
They went to airports and restaurants and offices and bathrooms in American cities. They looked at the level of bacteria as biological markers for things such as sweat, and they looked at hemoglobin and other bodily things, and the most frequently contaminated area was the playground.
Come on.
The second most contaminated area was
fresh air. The playground.
The daycare center.
I don't
45 to 46% showed high levels of contaminations, and public restrooms were down to 25%.
What contamination
public
is there on the playground?
Well, what do little kids do? They walk around playgrounds. They're in playgrounds. They're often touching their bodily areas, and then they're leaving it on the playground equipment. Germaphobes.
I never touched my bodily area when I was a kid on a playground. I played on the swings.
You forget that at all. Shopping carts were way down there. Armrests and buses were down
stuff.
There. Escalators. Now, I didn't think when I hold on to a handrail, I mean, I'm not a germaphobe, but I hold on the handrail that I'm going to get bacteria on my hands.
Sure, there's not a germaphobe in the world who ever touches the handrail on an escalator.
Well, luckily, most of us are not germaphobes. Yeah. I think germaphobes should simply stay at home, and that's all they do, and watch their TV.
I don't believe this about restrooms and... Playgrounds, baby, and daycare centers. Do you have a myth for us? We'll try to bust it or prove it right. Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Want to talk with Zorba? Call 800-462-7413. And on we go to Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Was camping recently, and, you know, as people are, you know, as they clean themselves up after they get home from camping, I was looking in the mirror and found a tick on my neck.
Mm.
And I guess I've figured I would ask you, what are the best and safest, most highly recommended ways of removing ticks? And, you know, you hear things about several home remedies, things like putting a hot matchstick against a tick, and I wasn't really enthusiastic about trying to brand my neck with a hot matchstick.
Well, so is the tick still in your neck as we speak?
No, sir, it's not.
I thought maybe you waited to deal with it until you got Zorba's advice, and maybe you were camping 2 or 3 weeks ago and thinking, I wonder,
the tick is the size of a basketball, right?
Thank you, Tom. Next question.
So anyway,
he's about
to
die.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
I actually did notice that the head did come out, which was, I was relieved to see that.
Yeah,
but
right.
I saved the tick. And I went online and I did some, amateur entomology and found I realized it was, in fact, a deer tick.
Right.
So I guess the second part of the question is, you know, when do I become concerned or do I need to start looking to get screened for Lyme disease?
Exactly.
So let's talk about ticks. First of all, the way to remove the tick is to remove the entire tick. And you can do that with any tweezers. You take a tweezers, you go all the way down to the skin, and you remove the tick with a little piece of skin. I mean, basically, that's what it is. People, if you pull it out and you leave the head in, then you just have to go back in and pull the head out. I mean, if you pull a tick out with your fingers and the head is still there, then you've got to go back and you've got to pull the head out.
What about the burning match things?
Absolutely not. That's about as, I don't want to say dumb and stupid, but that's a good example of something that's dumb and stupid. You know, you put it on there, you know, and the tick gets there and you brand yourself, and that's, you know, I mean, you don't need a scar for the rest of your life from the tick.
Yeah.
But you can pretty much use anything. So you can use a tweezers, long fingernails, fine. Yeah. You know, if you don't have long fingernails, go to a store where you see a woman with long fingernails and say, can you move this tick from there? You know, before you know it, it'll be on YouTube. Let's go to Lyme disease.
Yeah.
The tick has to be on for more than 24 hours for you to get Lyme disease. So you go out in the woods today. And tonight or tomorrow, you know, 20 hours later, you take a shower and you find a tick and you remove it, you don't have Lyme disease. It's got to be on for more than 24 hours, number one. That's simple.
Hmm.
The next step, though, is if you think the tick was on for longer than 24 hours, 200 milligrams of doxycycline taken one time can make a big difference. So that's all, within 72 hours. So you go and you say, I've been in the woods for the weekend. I don't know how long the tick has been there. Call your doctor, get it. And if you're a woods guy or a woods gal and you're going out there, get a bunch of doxycycline. If you go out in the woods and you see a tick, take 200 milligrams. That's what I do if I see the tick.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate the call. Before we go, Zorba, let's take a tip from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. A few weeks back, we had a caller on whose husband refused to use the air conditioner in his car because he thought he was saving gas mileage.
Absolutely,
remember that?
I do remember that.
Well, Lee in Bloomington, Indiana, heard that program and wants us to know that with the windows rolled up and the AC on, there's less wind drag on the vehicle, and you will get as good or better gas mileage as the other way around.
Really?
Isn't that interesting?
It's very interesting. Now, I have a question. Now, someone sent this to us. Is it true? Do we accept this as truth? I mean, where does he get his information?
I do.
I mean,
hey, this is a public radio listener,
right,
a Zorba pastor on your health listener. Why would we not accept it?
I agree with you. This is somebody who is certified, truthful, and knows his research.
Plus, there's backup. Our producer, Adam, tells me that we had three or four other listeners tell us the same thing in email.
Really?
So, yeah.
So, in other words, roll up your windows
and
your
gas mileage. Use the air conditioner. It's better gas mileage than rolling the windows down and turning off the AC.
Oh, my goodness.
On the newer cars. They're designed.
You mean versus the cars from the 70s.
Yeah, or the
like
40s
car,
or
like
the 20s.
Car. Like your car, the old cattle cruisers from the 70s.
We appreciate your tips. Keep sending them to us in an email, too.
Zorba@WPR.org.
Zorba, we'll see you next week.
Take care, Sam.
For a copy of this week's recipe and all things Zorba, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can bug our producer anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director. And Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0623Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.